Welcome back to the Nightmare Echoes podcast. I'm your host, Elazar, and I'm joined again by co-host Steven. Steven, how's it going?
Hey, I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. All right, what do we
talk about? Rob Zombie's Halloween 2.
All right, excited. Yeah, it opens with a quote about the white horse and its purity, what it means in dreams, which is interesting because Rob Zombie said that he just wanted it to mean childhood innocence, that it was just something he had around and it could have been a fire truck. It wouldn't have mattered. It could have, you know, been any toy and it would have been fine. But it's interesting. But we open with Mrs. Myers, still played by Sherry Moon Zombie, visiting young Michael Myers, who this time is played by Chase Vanek because Dage Farsh, like, grown too much. Like, I think they started trying to film with him, but he had grown a lot since the first one in 2 years. So it wasn't believable that he was the same character. So I thought that was interesting. But then we cut back to Halloween night right after the first one. We see Lori is walking covered in blood, rain's falling like crazy. She's still holding the gun in her hand, and Sheriff Brackett, Brad Dorff, pulls up to get her. She's definitely in shock. She starts crying that she killed him. I mean, if you got pulled over by a cop, I wouldn't say that.
She's covered in blood too. There was so much blood in the first one, and it definitely shows here too. She's just covered in blood.
Well, it was
Annie was covered in blood too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it was Rob Zombie's original plan to kill him so he didn't have to make a part two. But they told him they were going to make it without him. So he's like, fine, I'll make it. But that's why she's covered so much blood. And then we have a lot of back and forth scenes showing what everybody's going through. Annie's at the hospital. She's strapped to a gurney. She's screaming, am I going to die? And then we have Annie in surgery. They're saying that she's going to need plastics, but they are saying that they need to worry about other things right now. Her face is pretty bad. They're removing a fingernail and they're like trying to sew her all up and, you know, get all the blood off of her.
It was a mess.
Yeah, she was a mess. Well,
compared to like the original Halloween, this was a stark difference. I mean, she had a couple of scrapes and a bruise or two, and now it's like, wow, Lori, you're really messed up. Like, you're in ER and they're asking what's happened to this girl. I was gonna say, when I first watched this movie, I thought this movie was so much different from the original Halloween 2. It was a stark difference. And then I found out later that Rob Zombie was given freedom from Dimension Films to basically just make it how he wanted it.
Yeah.
Though he did have a lot of problems with the Weinsteins. They didn't get along, but he got to go with his original ideas and kind of just run with them. And so I thought that made for a pretty good movie.
Sure, there's definitely differences in his director's cut and the theatrical release, where basically of who survives or not, because the Weinsteins wanted one thing and he wanted a different thing, which is interesting.
Yeah, even at one point, one of the Weinstein brothers was talking about having a necklace of human ears that Mike Myers would wear. and you know, Rob Zombie's like, we're not going to do that.
That's funny. So we see Loomis get put into an ambulance, and then we see the crime scene people taking photos of Michael's body. Multiple people are needed to carry Michael's body to put him in the van with the other dead bodies. And Sheriff Brackett wants Michael secured when they get to county. We see Michael being transported. The drivers joke that it took 6 guys to lift one stiff. And the guy that's not driving starts talking about how hot Annie was, even covered in blood. Yeah, because he had issues, man. He joked about it.
He's a necrophiliac almost.
Yeah, I mean, he starts talking about he's never wanted to, you know, be with a corpse, but, you know, seeing that body has changed his mind. And the driver tells him that if Brackett heard you, you wouldn't have a job. And I think if Brackett heard you, he would probably shoot you because he's got the gun and law on his side. So he would find just means. I don't know. I wouldn't talk about the sheriff's daughter like that.
No. You know what I also thought was interesting is Mike Myers just sort of disappeared before, you know, the hide and seek thing.
Sure.
In this one, they actually put him in a van and then the van hits a cow. Yeah. Craziest thing.
That was funny.
Much more blood, more death, a cow death.
I just love that he's yelling, cow! He's like, what? Cow! And then they hit the cow. That's insane. And then when the guy comes to the driver, I think the passenger, the necrophilia guy, is dead instantly. But the driver comes up. He just starts saying the word fuck, like, repeatedly over and over again. Because he's, in shock.
And, you know, Mike Myers, of course, survives.
Yeah.
He can take whatever.
Without a scratch.
Like bullets and, you know, stabs and bats. But the interesting thing with this death that he does here is he murders him. I felt like Mike Myers likes to sort of play or torture with his victims a little bit sometimes. Yeah. And he's, you know, especially with his baby sister, like, he doesn't kill her in the first one. And now here in the second one, you know, he's sort of, I almost felt like it was a humanitarian thing. Like, he doesn't. This guy's obviously suffering after the accident. Instead of just playing with him some more, he just kills him. And I thought that was an interesting take. I don't know if that's what they were going for, but I did notice that it was almost a humanitarian killing because this guy's suffering a lot.
Sure, that could be true. Also, like you mentioned, compared to the original one, there's a lot more gore than, you know, I guess it's the times too, because that was, what, 31 years before this movie when...
81?
80, well, the original one came out in 80, right?
Oh, in 80? And
I think so. Oh, 78. 81. The original one came out 78.
Yeah, Halloween 1 came out 78.
And Halloween 2 was Halloween? Okay, right.
And then this is all the way in 2009. So
it's been a while. Yeah.
A long time.
Right. So yeah, I get audience want more gore at this point. Yeah. I think that's what we're seeing. But also, it's a Rob Zombie movie, so you're going to get it, you know, whether you want it or not. And then we see Michael looking in the distance, and he sees his mom with a white dress standing next to a white horse in the middle of the road. And he slowly starts walking to them.
The hallucination and dreams are interesting. I did kind of... sort of relate to this in a little way, because I think it's a plus side to have that in a horror movie, just to see how these killers and characters can disconnect from reality a bit. There, sure. There's a mental aspect there where they're totally disconnected. He's seen his mom and a white horse on the middle of the road. It's definitely a disconnect.
Sure. Cut to Lori in the hospital. Her grandmother's there. She's asleep. Lori has a big brace and a cast on her leg. And we cut to nurses that are joking about Thanksgiving dinner because it's already, you know, I guess it's after midnight on Halloween, so it's November now. Lori walks over to Annie's room and a nurse comes to tell her that she can't be there at the moment, that Annie needs to heal. On the way to walk her to a room, though, they call Nurse Daniels overhead, and so she asks Lori if she can get there on her own. But then Lori starts to get really dizzy, so she goes to ask if she could have something for her head. But when she sees the nurse doesn't say anything. She slowly turns around and she's been like slashed through her nose and her mouth. And so she's not sure. She's definitely in shock. I've said that a lot this episode already. But she starts to freak out. Yeah. And then the nurse starts screaming, falls on the floor.
And the nurse did a great job acting.
Oh, yeah.
Completely. Like, she's just like, what's going on? And then it's just like, ah. And I wanted to say, I thought the cast of this movie was great. I thought that Mike Myers, played by Taylor, he's huge.
He's a massive.
Big guy, yeah. And he did a great job. And then we have Scout Taylor Compton and Danielle Harris.
Which I love.
They did a great job, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Michael finishes off the nurse as Lori runs to the stairwell. And when she's in the stairwell, she finds another dead nurse. Michael leaves the knife in Nurse Daniel's head, and Lori continues with a limp down the stairs because she's got that cast on her leg. Michael follows her. Lori makes it outside. It's pouring rain like crazy. Apparently, this was not in the script, but when they were filming, it was raining, so they kept it.
That worked.
It worked. It really makes the scene. It kind of reminds me of how Friday the 13th had that stormy night, and for a good part of the movie, everybody is getting killed in the massive rain. I thought that was kind of neat. But then Michael grabs an axe, like a fire safety axe, and he goes, you know, starts following her. Lori finds the guard tower and bangs on the door screaming for help, and she's able to open the window and make it inside, and she hides under the desk. And outside, Michael's looking for her, and a car pulls up, and it's the security officer. His name is Buddy, and he's got coffee. He's trying to unlock the booth, but he's getting soaked. And Buddy's played by Richard Riley. I probably said that wrong. Riley, who was in Office Space. He's got people skills. Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I got people skills.
Why don't you people understand this?
Right. He fails to lock the door. Lori's frantic trying to explain that the nurse is dead, but Buddy doesn't understand what she's saying. He just wants to get her back to the hospital. He tells her, let me just go get my car and you just wait right here. He gives her the coffee and he locks the door. She's like, look, I'll lock the door. It'll be fine.
He does have people skills.
He does have people skills. He gave her his coffee. Coffee's precious, man. when he gets back, he's there like, look, it was fine. Sorry, the car didn't start. And as he's opening the door, Michael stabs him in the back. Laurie goes back to hide under the desk, and Michael circles around the small building, comes back to the door, breaks through the window, then starts destroying the walls with that axe.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. Like, just watching the axe go through the walls, and Laurie's inside, and the axe is coming through the wall, and you can see the outside.
So up to this point, watching it the first time, I'm like, oh, he just wanted to do a hospital movie just like Halloween 2.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And then she wakes up from a dream, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
That was great.
It's a dream. Like,
more dreams and hallucinations. And I like that. It sort of adds the artistic aspect, and these characters are sort of in their own worlds. They're not, you know, you get a glimpse into the mind of what's going on.
Sure.
With this character.
So she goes and talks in the bathroom. She's trying to tell herself there's no reason to be scared because Michael's dead. It's been a year. I notice that she has like a massive butterfly tattoo on her back. It's all in black. Downstairs, we cut to Sheriff Brackett. Lori is now staying at their house, and Annie's cooking breakfast, but the sheriff wants to go out and get a pastry. And Annie's, you know, just trying to make sure he eats healthier. They talk about getting pizza that night, and he wants them to get wheat crust. He's like, why don't you just put it on a cardboard, yeah, piece of cardboard?
She wanted wheat crust, and he was like, no. Just put it on a piece of cardboard.
And as they leave...
That's fiber.
Yeah. And as they leave, or as the sheriff leaves, Lori tells him, like, don't forget, I don't eat meat. And you can see here that Annie has all these scars up from her face from getting cut up, but surviving. But
both Lori and Annie have massive scars on their faces, especially.
Sure. And it looks like they have a good relationship. If you watch the non-theatrical version, though, in the director's cut, there's a scene here where Annie tells her to take it one day at a time. And Lori's just kind of like, oh, yeah, one day at a time. She's kind of smiling. They cut right here. But in the director's cut, she like freaks out on Annie. Like,
oh, you know, yeah. Like, she's like, I did watch that. And, yeah. And she's like, if somebody fucking tells me that again, I think was her word.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because the different versions definitely give you a different vibe. In the theatrical version, which I do own on Blu-ray, it's like they have a good, happy relationship. And in this director's cut, she's got more mental issues. We cut to Lori at therapy. Barbara is her therapist, played by Margot Kidder, who was Lois Lane in the Christopher Reeve Superman.
Oh, yeah.
I like recognize her. It's like, I know that face. Where do I know her? Here she's playing Barbara. She did play Barb in Black Christmas, the 1970s horror movie. And she was also in the Amityville Horror. Barbara explains that Lori can't find closure because of the fact that they never found his body. And Lori adds that she's really missing her parents. This also in the director's cut, she was a lot more upset and like very vocally upset and like disturbed at this point in the movie. Like,
I only watched the director's cut, so I don't have perspective of the Lori character that was portrayed in the other
movie. She seems to have it together a lot more.
Okay. Do they keep the scene where she looks at the picture on the wall and she sees a white horse? Because I thought that was interesting, too. It's
right
sort
here,
of like
I don't
related
remember
to what Mike Myers is hallucinating about and seeing the mom with the white horse. And Lori's sitting there and she's looking at the picture on the wall in the director's cut. And basically, she sees a white horse in
right
that picture.
I think we don't see her hallucinate besides the dream. Till way later in the theatrical version. But yeah, and then we get to see Loomis. He arrives in a stretched limo to his book signing. He's 45 minutes late to his own event, and then he gets upset about the picture because he's like, that's the old Loomis, I'm the new Loomis. And his publicist or booking agent or whatever she is, her role, is like, yeah, well, old Loomis sells 15% more books than new Loomis. And so she's like, this is why people want that picture up there. And then he tells her he refuses to go in that room until he gets a very specific drink, like
PG Tips, which is like an UK tea bags from UK.
Yeah, so she's like trying to figure out what it is. We see Lori arriving at work. We get Uncle Meat, who is played by Howard Hampson, who was Pete Lessard in Police Academy 2.
Oh.
Yeah, more Police Academy.
I didn't get that. That's cool.
And he was also the chief in Clue.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good movie. At Lori's work, we meet her friends Maya and Harley, and they convince Lori to wear this Halloween costume that they have coming up. It's like a whole set that it doesn't work unless all three of them are doing it. And then they just, you know, start rocking out at work. I just thought it was so interesting. Record store, I think, is what they worked at, that would need four staff members on staff at one time in this small town. I mean, maybe it's like inventory.
Complaining about how she's late, and it's like, wow, how much? Yeah, do you have enough money to pay all these people?
Yeah, exactly. That's too funny. At the book event, we see a clip of an interview with young Michael Myers. Then someone asks, when he goes for questions, the first question he gets is, do you feel personally responsible for the deaths of as many as 15 victims? And the next question is about the fact that the body was never found, can Michael still be alive? And Loomis is pretty upset. He's like, Michael Myers is fucking dead.
He's so disconnected. I feel like, yeah.
He definitely plays an asshole more than the first one.
Oh, yeah. I noticed the character difference. Stark character difference. Yeah. I did like the old...
He was good at it, though. I mean, I like the actor. So now Michael's walking through these people's land. We cut through these three guys in a truck, or two guys and a woman, complaining about drifters. And they're like, we've told them before to stay off our land, so we're going to go beat them up. And the woman is the one that's like, hey, guys, you're going too far. But they do. They hit him in the head with a crowbar. Then the other guy gets a
baseball bat.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's like, let me get a turn. Yeah, they told him, like, I warned you never come back. And the second guy gets annoyed that Michael isn't screaming in pain. He's like, you know, what's wrong with this guy? And the woman comes, she actually comes out and makes them stop, which I guess is kind of sad when he kills all three of them.
Yeah, well, I did notice here, there was one little thing there that I was sort of geeking out about. The mindless killing started to continue when Mike Myers put on the mask. And then he just goes after him. And
yeah, it was a good key scene. Yeah.
Something's going down.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Because I can't kill without this mask on. But you're right. It was filmed really epically. Like, uh-oh, it's about to happen. That's too cool. And then, did he kill the dog?
He not only killed the dog, but he ate the dog, too.
Did he eat the dog?
And maybe that was only in the director's cut. But interestingly enough, this was the same time that Laurie and Annie were getting the pizza.
Yeah.
And the sheriff was saying, man was meant to eat meat. We all have a little bit of caveman in us. And then it cuts over to Mike Myers eating this dog. It's crazy.
Yeah. Okay, I did write that. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Then somewhere Annie runs to puke. I'm not sure why. I don't think she was disgusted by the meat.
She talked about how the meat might have been touching her side of the pizza with the pineapple, maybe.
Maybe.
She got sick. I don't know. It's not very clear to me.
But Annie runs after her because she's a good friend and brings her a towel. And then we see Michael with more visions of his mother in a church. She's wearing all black now. And little Michael, he's there and, you know, he speaks. They've been waiting for this moment. And young Michael wants to show her something. And they go to like a party where everybody's dressed weird. There's a big table.
But they had the cool Halloween masks on too. There's sort they? Of like a shout out to like Halloween 3.
I keep missing
they
this.
Had like the pumpkin heads
nice
at the table, and there's yeah
as it, much as I love Halloween 3, I don't know how I'm missing this.
Yeah, I did like how there was an artistic aspect to these hallucination scenes.
Sure.
And they really went all out with the costumes and the parties and just the black and white. I thought it was great.
But yeah, so young Michael tells or shows this hallucination, which he's a hallucination as well, of, you know, his mother that they found Boo. And it shows, we see Laurie laying on the table.
Oh, yeah, on the table around the people with all the masks on and stuff.
Right. So Laurie wakes up screaming as if this was her dream. Like all this, but Michael was seeing it, so yeah, I guess she's hallucinating. Like this, they're sharing,
like, so he's hallucinating, you know, he's daydreaming, but she's like
seeing totally it in her dreams,
dreaming this, yeah,
which is crazy.
Yeah, pretty cool characters.
And the next day, Michael walks back into Haddonfield. Dr. Loomis is also in Haddonfield being interviewed. He's filming in front of the Myers house, and his agent is really unhappy about it. He says something really rude, something like, if I wanted your opinion, I would beat it out of you. Like, they set him up as being more
character
of a jerk.
In like the original Halloween 1 and 2, he's so wise and helpful and cool and calculating too. Like, he kept a lighter, calculating that he would use it later to stop Mike Myers. And this one, he's just like this arrogant business character, only interested in money, very greedy. But yeah. I don't know. What's your thought on Loomis's character?
I mean, I definitely think there was some progression there. I think he's tired of people making him the reason that Michael killed people, because he was just a doctor trying to help him. And we know by the last one, he'd already given up on that concept of really helping him. But I don't know. I think the fame has just gotten to his head. He thinks he's more...
He's haughty. He's very haughty. And yeah, and flirtatious, I think you were mentioning
completely.
And it's... You know,
he's flirting with the interviewer here.
Yeah.
And that's where his agent like interrupts him from it, which is frustrating. He's like frustrated by it. That's why he's mad, because he was, you know, trying to flirt. He does that later at the book signing too, like every woman.
Are you a natural redhead?
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So we see Laurie taking a bath. She's daydreaming of Michael as a boy. She seems to have some kind of seizure while having a vision of Mrs. Myers and young Michael. And then she wakes up. And that was a dream again. Mm-hmm. That bathtub was a dream. But this time she's dreaming and she's having them in daydreams. She's complaining to her stuffed animal. She's like, I'm going crazy. If you're talking to your stuffed animal, you've gone crazy.
I don't know. I still do that.
I'm playing. I'm playing, honestly.
Hey there, Pookie.
All right, we see Michael walking closer over while we're getting a voiceover, and we hear a Loomis, which is in Sheriff Brackett's TV. Loomis claims that Michael isn't alive, and it's just police incompetence, which is making the sheriff mad.
Yeah.
And we cut to the strip club, the Rabbit in Red, which is the what was in the original matchbook in the original Halloween movie.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
So, like, it's what the nurse lit her cigarette with, and it was that matchbook, I think. And then later, when the guy that Michael stole the clothes from, whose truck he used, there was a matchbook there that said Rabbit in Red.
Oh,
so we never got to see the in the originals, but we always had that, you know. So, you know, we get to actually see it, but we get to see this guy, the owner of the strip club. He's on the news dressed as Frankenstein. He's all about himself, and his employee, the stripper, is all into him. One of his, I don't know if he's the bouncer, you know, the guy who works at the bar is there, and he's getting tired of him being there because he's trying to flirt with this girl, really trying to have sex with this dancer, and he tells him to go take out the trash. So while he's taking out the trash, he's all pissed off because he was just like pushed out of there. That guy runs into Michael, and Michael's like, don't start anything with me. I've already put one guy in the emergency room tonight. I'll do it to you too.
Michael and his true character is just like standing there intimidating.
Yeah.
And you know, you can tell the fear is on this guy's face. Like he can.
So, yeah. So anyway, he punches the guy. He hurts his own hand. And then Michael instantly one move and the other guy's on the ground. And then he stomps on his face and his face just turns into mush. And young Michael and Mrs. Myers are there just watching it happen.
Yeah. Michael Myers goes into town right away in the original movies. And he goes to the hospital after people. In this one, I thought it was interesting how he's sort of a hermit for 2 years. Hiding out on this land.
Right.
Sort of as a hermit. And now he's coming out and killing people again.
Well, the difference could be that it took him that long to walk there. Because in the original one, he drove everywhere. It's hilarious, just, you know, Michael Myers driving. I still think it's comical, but
yeah, that old station wagon.
Yes.
It was like, what are you doing? And he was like omnipresent. He was all over the place.
Yeah, he was always watching them.
Always watching him from the clothesline the station wagon. And this one, he's just like a hermit.
I'll walk there.
In this shed, walking around.
Yeah, I mean, just one thing Rob Zombie didn't want him to do. It's like Rob Zombie always thought it was ridiculous that Michael could drive, understandably.
Yeah, right. It didn't really fit well with his character. So I thought the whole hermit idea was pretty good.
Yeah.
It did sort of bother me that he was wearing the mask less and less. And when he did have a mask on, it was sort of this ripped up old thing. Sure. So, but he had a super creepy look.
Yeah.
The long beard,
it was
tangled
really good.
Hair.
The mask is definitely better than part 4. That's like a bleached, really bright white mask that he gets in part 4 because it was like a brand new one from the store that he stole.
But I do like the sort of the aspect of the ripped up clothes and the hermit lifestyle, the tangled hair, sort of you're questioning his sanity by just seeing him.
Completely. All right. So we go back to the owner of the strip club and the stripper, and they're, you know, about to have sex. You know, he wants to have sex with the Frankenstein mask on. He's like, oh, you're so scary. And as soon as they start, Michael walks into the door. The owner grabs a gun. He goes after Michael. I don't know why he approached so close. Then Michael just grabs his arm and breaks it. The bone pops out. And they're both running. The stripper's completely naked as she's trying to run. And Michael throws the owner against the wall and knocks him out. He grabs the stripper, slams her face into a mirror, repeatedly destroying her face. And he turns the clothes sign on, which is interesting.
I didn't catch that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's not like they had a lot of business. I thought that it was like really late. And that's why, like, they were already close.
That's what it looked like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he mentioned how it was Halloween.
Yeah.
And he wanted to basically fuck the stripper as a Frankenstein.
Exactly. So now we are in Halloween day and the town is decorating for night. Lori visits a petting this pig in town square. So in the theatrical version, it's like a nice cute scene. I'm told in the director's cut, she's upset at the pig, or she's like,
she's very upset and she talks to her doctor about it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
she's tried to get more meds and she's really lost it. It's clear that her character in the director's cut was going through a lot of mental health issues.
Right.
Yeah.
So we see the sheriff, who's now reading Loomis's book. He sees that he betrayed him on the secret, and he's told the world now that Lori is Michael's younger sister, Angel Myers. So he tries to call home. He gets Annie and he's asking if Lori's there. She says she's already gone out, and he asks her to, like, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you just have her call me when you see her? She's like, what's wrong? He's like, nothing's wrong. Just have her call me when you see her. And this is where we get Loomis at the book signing.
Oh, yeah.
Natural redhead. What were you going to say, though?
Oh, no. I was just thinking about how Dr. Loomis is he lacks empathy. And I thought it was interesting to see how the sheriff was showing a lot of empathy toward Lori, calling home, making sure she's okay. He knows what's in the book.
Right.
He knows what she's going to find out. You know, Dr. Loomis, he's just like greedy, trying to sell, doesn't really care. There was one quote they said, these are people's lives you're toying with. I think it might have been the parent there at the book signing that said that. And just Linda's thinking dad. About some of like the recent school shootings and things that we've experienced in the U.S. and the lack of empathy for the victims' families. I thought the sheriff's character did a much better job just taking care of them. And Dr. Loomis is just this seen as like this almost American greed icon.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Crazy.
Completely. Yeah. So yeah, so at that book signing, we meet this guy named Chet Dons. He wants him to sign it to Chet, the bringer of death, and Chet has two T's. And then the next guy in line is Linda's dad. In the book, you see Linda's picture there, and he's like, ooh, she's pretty. It's like, she was, and your guy killed her, and he brings out a gun, and like security tackles him, and then we cut to Loomis driving away, and the publicist saying that the police are claiming the gun wasn't even loaded.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, and I forgot who had that quote. It might have been his agent that said that. But yeah, these are people's lives you're toying with. And Dr. Loomis, just it feels like his character just doesn't get it.
Yeah,
He doesn't care. He's very arrogant, you know, making fun of Chet with two T's.
Yeah, exactly.
Not caring about the...
So we see Lori. Lori had bought the book. And so she's now in her car screaming. She's all pissed off because she's reading this that...
She finds out. The sheriff was trying to...
Mm-hmm.
Trying to take care of her about. She's the daughter, and her brother is Mike Myers. She's Angel Myers.
Right, exactly. So then we get a little bit more scenes of Michael walking closer into town. And then Lori's at home, and she's crying, asking Annie if she knew, because your daddy's a little princess, you know all. Annie's just trying to be a good friend and understand what's going on, try to ask her, but she won't talk to her. And she packs up to leave, and she tells her to tell your dad that Angel says fuck you.
Yeah, well, Lori was a baby when everything happened, so she wouldn't have known all of this.
Yeah, and Annie just wouldn't have either.
Just total. Yeah, Annie was young, too, so she wouldn't have known anything.
Right. She just, you know, I guess didn't believe that there's no way Annie didn't know. Like, her dad would have told her, but...
Yeah. Bombshell drop.
Yeah.
The sheriff wasn't ready for that, for sure.
Yeah. Well, he tells one of his deputies to go watch the house, and he says, even if she kicks you out, you wait outside. So Lori shows up to her two friends' place and asks if they can crash there. At first, they don't understand why she's freaking out, and she shows them in the book. They think it's a joke. They think it's a joke that when she says that she's Michael Myers' sister, they're like, I wouldn't even touch that joke. But then she shows them in the book that where it shows her picture and then that she's Angel Myers.
Yeah.
Sorry, Miani. And then we get to see Chris Hardwick. I'm sure he's playing somebody different, but I love him from The Talking Dead. He's after every episode of The Walking Dead, The Talking Dead comes on and they talk about everything that happens in the show.
I didn't recognize him.
He's one of my favorite hosts of all time. Like, that guy can really run a show. But they're talking about the Dr. Loomis's book, Evil Walks Among Us.
And is Weird Al there?
Weird Al is there.
Oh my God.
He agreed to be there. If he agreed to do the movie under the one rule that he got to pick his own clothes that he was going to wear there. So he's dressed just like Weird Al would dress all the time.
I liked how Dr. Loomis said, Mr. Weird. He's like, please, Al.
Yeah. Oh, but I love where Chris Hardwick asks him a question. He's like, some people would downright say that you are profiteering off of, you know, off of these victims. And Weird Al's response is like, that's
profiteering off the misery of others. And he's like, yeah. and yeah, Weird Al Weird Al's joke is totally on point.
He's like, it's totally unfazed, unbiased. It's like, I always ask for permission before I come to songs. Like, it's awesome. And Loomis gets so pissed off because he's like, oh, did you want to do this interview? He's like, oh, go ahead. It was awesome.
Yeah, Weird Al just jumped in there and said, yeah, I'm profiteering off the misery of others.
So then they show, this is funny, right? So Loomis is pissed, yelling at his publicist. She's saying he was fantastic. He did a great job at the interview. And right before they both walk out the door, the woman at the desk is there waving by. And they're like, oh, have a good evening. Like, they're in the middle of, obviously, he's pissed off. But they both turn and smile to, like, pretend like they're happy that they were on the show.
At one point during the show, who is the host again?
Chris Hardwick.
Yeah, Chris Hardwick tells Dr. Loomis, you got snapped on by Weird Al. I thought that was great, too.
I think that scene's, or at least in the theatrical version, he's watching it later in the hotel room. For some reason, he watches his own interview, and he's all pissed off.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's when he was watching it on the TV later. He's watching.
It was awesome, though.
But yeah, I thought that was really great.
Oh, man. We see this little kid trick-or-treating. His name's Mark. He's dressed like a clown, just like Michael was when he was a kid. That kid runs into Michael and he's like, oh, you're a giant. Can we be friends? Which is awesome. Kids are great.
Which goes back to how huge this actor is. And yeah. He was a wrestler or something, right?
Yeah, that's what you said last time.
He's a big guy.
Yeah,
he's, I think he's like 6'8". 6'9", or 6'8", or 6'9".
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Really big guy. 7 foot is what I think one of the characters said in this movie, but he's like 6'9".
Yeah, he's massive. It's crazy. Yeah, there's definitely a contrast there. And then Lori's ready to the party, and her friends want to know if she should just stay home and watch some TV, but she's like, no, we're going to go party. At the party, there's a lot of costumes. They're dressed like Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I thought the costumes and the art was awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was so good.
The band is playing.
Music is cool, too.
Yeah.
It's Rob Zombie, so you got to have cool music.
Well, they're playing a song called Terror Train, which is a reference to a movie starring Jamie Lee Curtis from 1980 called Terror Train. Harley is the one that's all, like, excited about her costume. She's like, I'm a chick dressed as a dude pretending to be a chick. Which is hilarious.
And she later walks out with the guy. And the guy's like, are you... A chick or
you are a chick though, right?
Yeah, you are a chick.
you do have a vagina, right? Yeah. Like, why don't you stick your hand down my pants and find out? And this guy, that guy is hilarious because he talks so much about all the women he gets, but he's too awkward to actually do it. And when she's ready to have sex, he's like, I gotta go pee.
He was totally nervous, almost acting like a virgin, not ready for this, you know, kind of thing. I think it's interesting, and this is just a general horror movie observation. A lot of the time, the characters that are younger and sexually active are the targets of these murderers.
Yeah, that's definitely something that Halloween did. Like, Laurie was the innocent one, the original 1978, and her friends that were more the ones that were sexually
Friday
active.
Friday the 13th too, I felt that there was a lot happening in that movie.
Yeah, which is pretty interesting. But yeah, that's definitely one of those horror tropes. They go over those rules in Scream, right? You never say, I'll be right back. You never have sex.
Scream.
You never do drugs. Yeah. So yeah, those are definitely the rules of a horror movie. I guess you have to know that you're in a horror movie though. That's the problem.
Just behave like you're a saint the entire time, and you're gonna be fine.
So we see Loomis in his hotel room. That's where you know you got snapped at by Weird Al. There's also a line here where Weird Al says, "We're talking about the Austin Powers Mike Myers, aren't we?" Like, that was great.
That was really good.
Which is funny because in the movie he's Michael, but last episode that we recorded, you called him Mike a lot, and I'm like,
oh, I didn't catch that.
I kept thinking of, you know, Mike Myers, the actor. What you were saying, it's just funny.
Shrek. Yeah.
Michael killed those two in the van. Like, he went to go pee. He was standing by a tree. Michael stabs him in the back. Then he goes to the van and he gets Harley and he just starts fighting with her and kills her in the van. We get Lori in the party. She's getting all fuzzy. She's hallucinating. She starts calling for Maya. And then she sees a vision of young Michael. Now, who she knows is her mom, Mrs. Myers. And so she starts screaming for Maya. And Maya goes to get her to take her out of the party and take her home. We see the deputy watching the house. This is funny. Annie's like so pissed off. She, you know, pushes the deputy outside and he's like, I'm gonna do what I have to do. She's like, oh, what are you gonna do, huh? Move your meat wagon over there, all right? Like, get out of my face. And he's like, your dad told me to be here. She's like, oh, my dad told you to be here. It's like,
I think
she's so pissed off.
Yeah, and Sheriff even said he's told the sheriff the previous year she kicked him in the nuts or something when he was trying to be there to protect her during Halloween.
That's horrible. Michael's outside in the shadows and Annie's inside taking a bath, and we see the deputy like pacing back and forth. I talked about this last time, I think, that we see this tree. It's very dark. It's like we see this tree. The deputy is on the other side of the tree from where we could see, but not like the trees between them, but he's just further from the tree than we are in our point of view. Then Michael appears out of nowhere from behind the tree, but I think if Michael was there, the deputy would have saw him. So I think Michael teleported behind that tree.
And then killed him.
It had to be.
You know, it's the whole hide and seek thing and how he just appears out of nowhere.
Right.
Yeah, we get that's great. I like that part of his character.
Yeah, completely.
He just appears.
We get that classic medicine cabinet horror movie scene where someone opens the mirror, closes the mirror, and then they see someone in the mirror. So Annie's in the restroom. She sees Michael. She just starts running. It's like the music cuts out and it's silent while he's going to kill her, which is pretty crazy.
Back to the thought of Michael Myers just appearing. He's all over the place. He's at the party. He's at that party. And then he just at their house. Like, where did he come from?
He got there really fast.
Yeah.
He did. He totally teleported. All right, so then we do hear a scream as we cut back to Maya bringing Lori to the Brackett house. So Lori's decided that she would go back to her house, be with her, the people that do care about her. When Lori gets inside, we see that Michael is still upstairs. They get upstairs. They see Annie's room is destroyed, and they start looking for Annie. We see flashes of Annie getting killed here as Lori finds her body, and Lori tells Maya to call 911. Maya runs downstairs, calls the police. She's on the phone. She can't give them the address. She's like, I know what street we're on. I'm at a friend's house. And she goes outside, tells her the number of the street. As she tells him the number of the street, Michael grabs her, drags her into the house. We cut to the sheriff, and the dispatcher's like, hey, we just got a 911 call. And he's like, well, then you sent out dispatch. Why are you telling me about it? And she's like, because it came from your house. And so he's on the run.
Now
like
him, he knows.
Yeah, him something. And the other deputy are on their way. Yeah. You know, Annie dies in Lori's arms.
She finally dies because I think in the original series, she died much earlier, maybe in the first
movie. In the car. Yeah, so she never, in 1978, she was going into the car. She didn't have her keys, so she went back into the car to get her keys. She comes back to the car, opens the door, and then when she gets in the car, she's like, wait, I didn't have to unlock it. And that's when he kills her. There's like fog all over the car, so it's not very gory.
That the death scene when the sheriff showed up was really dramatic and well done. Like it cuts to like these almost like home video memories.
Sure, yes.
Of her when she was a girl, and it's very emotional.
I think a lot of the fans, and I think this was the intent, was to show her as a kid as well, because we've known her in the Halloween franchise since she was a little girl. And so this was like her proper death send-off, because when her character died in Halloween 6, she was recast as somebody else. So therefore, she never got that death that she deserved, because she was in the Halloween series for 2 movies. So this is that death. They're like, hey, like now you've been in 4 of these movies. We've known you since you were a kid. This is your send-off, and this is like your memoriam of all the times you were in Halloween, which is pretty
neat.
Oh,
so good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Oh, let's see here. So Lori runs out of the house before the sheriff's arrived. And when the sheriff's arrives, the officers don't want to let him get in there. And Brad Dourif, like, he's selling this grief. He's an amazing actor. He is this, like, you're going to let me in. I'm going to see my daughter. He's freaking out. And we cut to Lori's lost in the woods. She steals a car and starts yelling for this car. And as the car approaches, the guy jumps out and he's like, I'll take you to the hospital. But the guy is grabbed by Michael and he slams him through the windshield.
He just appears out of nowhere.
And then Michael picks up the car and flips it over.
Oh my gosh, he's a beast.
He
just flips it over like it's nothing.
He'd be good if I had a flat tire to help you out, like lift so you could change it out. He'd probably kill you with a tire.
Granted, I think it was a Volkswagen, but still, like, he flipped the whole car.
That's insane. And then the car catches on fire. The horn's ringing like crazy. Mrs. Myers and Michael, the young Michael, are there, and Michael starts carrying Lori. They arrive at a barn, and this is, like, where the final scene's going to be.
The hermit shed.
The hermit shed. Yeah. One of the deputies tells Brackett that witnesses spotted him walking towards that barn, and they ask if you want us to handle this, and he gives him this look of his face like, are you freaking serious? But he's like, I'm going, but you better drive, because he's like in this obviously emotional state. But now Lori can talk to Mrs. Myers.
And in the cinematography, I thought, was really good for some of these scenes.
Sure.
That are more artistic with the daydreams and the dreams and hallucinations and the color scheme of like white and black and the white horse. And but it's exciting to see that she's sort of together with her family again, so to speak, in these hallucinations.
Yeah, it's nice in a crazy way.
In a crazy way.
But it's nice. Yeah, the hallucination of Mrs. Myers is like, now repeat after me. I love you, mommy. And it takes her a couple times, but she does say it. She's like, I love you, mommy. It's crazy. A helicopter arrives and all the other police are on their way. We cut to Loomis, who sees from his hotel room the situation that Michael Myers is alive. And then he has Lori hostage, and the news reporter goes, there's like earlier today, it was revealed in Loomis's book that Lori is the younger sister of Michael. And so Loomis drives over there, arrives at the scene. Sheriff just slaps Loomis and he pulls out his gun.
Well deserved.
Yeah. And he pulls out his gun and he wants to shoot him, and the other officers hold him back. He tells him to escort them off the scene, but Loomis says, I can walk on my own. So he goes to turn around and then he just runs for it. I'm like, this is the worst cops ever. Like, there's no way I would have been on him until he left. One of those cops would have stayed with him until he was gone. That was crazy. So he runs. He's halfway there before anybody even notices he's on his way. He's like, I'm just trying to help. And he goes in the barn. When he gets in the barn, Lori's being held by young Myers, and Loomis is trying to talk Michael into letting Lori go with him. Lori is screaming that he has me, he won't let me go. Lewis is like, who has you? Like,
the no one adult has you. Michael Myers is standing behind, I think, the young Michael Myers. So I almost thought, like, it's sort of
but
confusing what's
that.
Real and what's not real. Like, is he there? Sure. Is he not there? And the other weird thing is his mask is sort of deteriorated or gone now.
Yeah.
You can see his face and his expressions more. There's a lack of this anonymous sort of nature behind Michael Myers and how he's hiding behind this mask. He's sort of like out in the open now.
Right. So I know there's differences between the theatrical and the
this might have been the director's cut,
right? So in the director's cut, the way it goes down, I think all three of them are killed in the scene. But in the theatrical version, I think Loomis is knocked out. Lori stabs Michael, and then Lori comes outside wearing the mask, gets on her knees and takes off the mask. And then they cut to her in the hospital room.
That's interesting.
This long hallway.
Because, like, in the director's cut, she shot.
Yeah.
The police shoot her.
Oh.
The police shoot the wrong person. It's Lori. She's the innocent victim
here. I am wrong on one part, though. Yeah. Sorry. She doesn't stab Michael in the chest. The cops shoot Michael. It looks like Brackett did it in the theatrical version for inside the shed. She walks outside with a mask, kneels down, takes the mask off, and then we see her cut to in the insane asylum. But I know that the version that Rob Zombie wanted to be, which is the director's cut, he wanted all the characters to be dead. So that he couldn't possibly make it.
That's interesting, because even in the director's cut, after she's shot, she still appears in the asylum.
Right.
At the end.
He would have you believe that's her moving on to the afterlife, and the mom with the horse showing up is escorting her there.
Oh.
But that's not how I read it.
And then there's a creepy smile too.
Sure.
At the end. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she's alive. At least in the theatrical version, she's alive.
Yeah, so I had a sort of a different take.
Sure.
I almost felt like we're bringing the family back together in death.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, everyone's reunited. And the way that they're laid out there near that barn, where they're just almost in a pattern.
Sure.
You know, where the mom and Michael Myers and Lori's there after she's supposedly shot in the director's cut. So I just thought, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe that is a sign, like, she's actually dead. We don't know.
So, you know, the movie didn't do too well. And Rob Zombie has a lot of ideas on what went wrong. He believes that actual crew members were somehow stealing the production money, which was had him less to spend on. I don't know how you would do that and get away with it, though. And he also said that the release date was
there
supposed
ways.
To be.
I got pockets.
You got pockets. But you think it's not like they keep a big load
like
of cash to spend. I don't know. But
in the back of the director's chair, there's that pocket.
That's what that pocket's for. Okay. And then he also blames that it was originally supposed to come out on Halloween in 2009, which would make sense, but they actually pushed it to come out in August instead.
Oh,
which
so bad timing.
That would be, especially for a movie titled Halloween.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So the asylum has those white walls again, the artistic nature, even the water fountain is white. Like, everything's white. And then you've got this stark black strip at the bottom near the floor. And I just thought the artwork there, whoever came up with that, I thought it was pretty brilliant, the contrast and sort of the emotions that I felt when I was seeing this asylum and Lori there and her white and the creepy smiles.
Who would get a room that big? That room was massive.
That was a huge, massive room.
Yeah. Yeah, if I go to an asylum, I want a room that big.
Little box with some soft walls, and that's about it.
Exactly. So one more thing. Apparently, there was reports to the ATF that the film was unsafe with his gun use, so they shut it down for a few days to inspect their firearms, which cut into their production time and made the shooting schedule worse. That's another reason that Rob Zombie is blaming for the film not being as amazing as it could have been. I don't know.
I did notice they have some interesting firearms, and I think I mentioned this in the previous podcast, but they had a Smith & Wesson that Dr. Loomis had in the original.
Yeah.
And there was a Smith & Wesson when Michael Myers' mom commits suicide. She's got that. And
Yeah, we don't see that in the theatrical one. We just were told that she killed herself. The word fuck is said 112 times in this movie.
You count it?
No, it's online. Okay. I didn't count
Somebody else counted.
Somebody else counted. I'm taking the credit.
Maybe a bot, ChatGPT.
Yeah, maybe. That's too funny. Okay, so... Wait, did Michael, as an adult in the director's cut, say or yell die at the end of the movie?
I don't think so.
When he was stabbing Dr. Loomis?
He was so quiet. Like, he's stuck with his character.
Maybe that's not correct.
Sounds like I need to watch, especially the ending on the theatrical cut.
Oh, yeah, it's much different. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's definitely still different. But yeah. The only other piece of trivia I have is that Rob Zombie wanted his wife, Sherry Moon Zombie, to be in the movie because he needed someone tall to be the actress. But he puts her in everything.
Oh, he does. Yeah, she's in his other movies, too.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. Anything else you want to say about the movie? Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for being here, guys. Hope you listen next time. Bye.